Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 52 of Boston's Best. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guests on today's podcast are Liz and Jared Corrali. They are the husband and wife owners of Bone Up Brewing Company. They're located at 38 Norman Street in Everett and have been open since 2016. They are celebrating their big five-year anniversary this summer with a three-day weekend bash full of live bands and specialty brews. It's the last weekend in August, so be sure to pop by. Jared and Liz met over brews and music, and their relationship took off from there. They keep Bone Up's atmosphere the same way, and they really connect with the community and customers in pretty unique ways. They have the Puppers Past series, which is where they brew beers for dogs who have passed on based on their personalities. All these donations go to rescues. They've also done beers for brides and grooms who are about to get married. Two different beers that are made to be blended together and served into a beer tail. In this episode, we talk in depth about the early successes and challenges they faced when opening Bone Up, and how their location in Everett has really turned into a hub of breweries and distilleries in the town that wasn't there before they existed. And be sure to listen to the end as Liz and Jared share their advice for someone who wants to start their own business, what they would tell their 18-year-old selves, and how they define success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week, we have Jared and Liz Corrali. They are the owners of Bone Up Brewing Company in Everett. How you guys doing?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Doing well. Summer's here. People are finally getting out a little bit more often. So I think that's good for everyone's personal well-being, but obviously businesses as well. So it's I'm in a good mood. So I'm very excited to have you guys on. Came across you on social media. I think it was Instagram. And super excited to have you guys on. I just love chatting breweries. I think it's such a cool industry. And the industry itself has kind of exploded over the last decade or so. So I just love talking to new breweries. I kind of got into the brewery scene like 5 years ago. So always excited. So thanks for coming on.
Our pleasure.
So before we get into the brewery itself, like, give us a little background on the two of you. Are you from Everett or are you from elsewhere?
We are not from Everett. We're actually both from Connecticut. We met up in the Boston area. Yeah, we're both from Connecticut originally.
Okay.
I moved up here from the DC area where I was living after college.
Nice. How about yourself, Liz?
I grew up in the New Haven area, central Connecticut, and I moved up to Boston for college in 2007. And I just stuck around. I got a job right out of school. And then a few years after that, I met Jared and now we got roots. So Boston's home, even though we're not from here.
Yeah. Was the initial plan to go back, or did you just fell in love with the city? Or
I didn't want to go back. not for any like particular reason, but I always knew I wanted to be in Boston or some sort of mid-sized city. And there's just so much to do here. It's a good city, very walkable. It's right on the water and lots of good beer.
Yeah. A lot of good beer around here. A lot of good beer. So before you guys decided to open up your own business, which I would love to get into, What were the jobs you had out of college before you decided to go into being, you know, a business owner?
I'll let you go first.
So my internship actually turned into a full-time job at some point during my senior year. I don't really remember when, but basically I was one of the first employees for a very small startup, basically like Pinterest for dudes. It was just like a custom wall you could build with different pieces of like fashion and music and sports stuff that you liked. And I did all the UI and UX work for that. I did their logo. I managed their social media.
Oh, nice.
Basically the whole front facing part of the business. Picked up a lot of great skills.
Yeah.
And I did that for a year or two. And after a while, I kind of realized I didn't want to be sitting behind a desk doing the whole 9-to-5 thing. And, I was 22 at the time and just wanted to try something different before I got locked in. So I ended up quitting that and getting a bartending job at a beer bar in Allston. And that's where I met Jared.
Oh, nice. Were you working there?
I was indeed working there. I had been working in production at a brewery. And after I left there, I knew I wanted to stay working in beer. So just landed at this beer bar almost by accident and stayed there for a couple of years. Before that, like I actually got my degree in computer science, and I kind of bounced in and around that industry a little bit. When we were starting Bonob, Liz and I both got desk jobs so that we could have like a normal schedule and also income. It turns out we don't have a lot of that.
You need money to start businesses.
Yeah, that's an important detail.
Yeah.
And so, while we were planning Bonob, I was actually a computer programmer for a coupon website, which is exactly as exciting as it sounds.
That's fair. Yeah, it's interesting. So you both were working elsewhere while you started Bonob. Is that what I gather?
Yeah, it was a lot of like planning, writing the business plan and just like figuring out what we wanted to do before we actually made the jump.
Yeah, I mean, you're going from, full-time incomes to zero income. So it makes a sense. That's kind of what happens a lot with people with the transition. They do a little bit of each. How long did the idea from idea to, I guess, like when it actually happened, when you guys decided to open up Bonob?
I feel like it's a lot more fluid than that. There was never any specific day where the two of us were like, let's start this business. Like, let's start writing the plan now. It was more like, it was always a long-term goal of yours. And I always wanted to work for a small company. And we ended up deciding to put both of our skill sets together to do it. And it was right around the time you turned 30. I remember that's when you started talking about it a lot more. It's like, I'm 30, like I really want to do this and not wait any longer.
Yeah.
And we had the time to work on it and start planning it. So
Yeah, it was something that had kind of always been at the back of my mind. Like that was why I got a job working in production at a brewery.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to start one. That was why I wanted to work in a bar, because I knew I wanted it to be a brewery and tap room. And the best way to learn how to do it is to do it. So we learned a lot of ways on how to not do it from that bar, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So is there a meaning behind the name? How did the name come about?
So the logo for the company actually predates the name by several years.
Okay.
Our logo is a little skull with a mustache. His name is Horatio.
Yep.
He's come to become like our little mascot over the years. But again, in the very early days of planning, it was just like, okay, Jared, like we're going to be a company. We need a logo and we need a name. Like, what should it be? And almost before I could finish the sentence, Jared like pulled this piece of scrap paper out of nowhere with like a little doodle of a skeleton on it. He's like, this guy right here. And so we just sort of wanted to build a brand around that. We wanted the name to be tied into like skull or bones, something like that.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of brainstorming, a lot of late night sessions on it. We ended up with Bonob because one, it's short, it's easy to remember. And two, the phrase Bonob learns to learn more about something or to brush up on a topic.
Yeah,
and we both love to chat beer and we love to just educate people on the different styles that we're doing and any cool brewing tricks that we have picked up when we're talking to people behind the bar. We're just like, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Bonob on beer.
There you go. I mean, that's pretty cool. No, it's easy. It's catchy. I like the name of it. I'm always curious how businesses come up with their own names. So I like the Horatio aspect to it. And you're located in Everett, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So how long did it take a while to find a location that sounds like that was a quick response. Yeah.
it was a process.
Yeah.
We were intending to start as a very small brewery because, well, I mean, we mentioned earlier, you need money to start a brewery. Yeah. We didn't have a lot of that.
Yeah.
So we had a pretty like specific size limitation in mind. And we basically just looked at every suitably sized industrial/commercial property within 30 to 50 miles of where we were living at the time. We were in Southie at the time. That was, well, I guess a lot of people have spent years looking, and we spent 6 months or so before we like actually decided on this place in Everett. Yeah, it was down between a spot in Norwood and the place that we ended up going. And kind of the clincher was we called up City Hall in Everett and we were like, hey, we're looking to start a brewery in your town. Like, is that something that we'd be able to do? And they said, yes, absolutely. We've done this twice before. We're interested in bringing more breweries in. And we called up City Hall in Norwood and we said, hey, we want to start a brewery in your town. What do we do? And they said, oh.
They were just like, like what? Like a Budweiser?
And yeah, like, and it was just kind of like, it's a slightly different experience. And yeah, I think like Castle Island ended up in Norwood, and I think they had a couple hiccups getting their beer garden open because the city just didn't know what that was and didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. So it made the decision easy for you, you know? Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
I'm so happy we ended up in Everett. Like, no location is completely perfect, but we are super close to the city.
Yeah.
We're right off the Orange Line. We're nestled right in with a bunch of other breweries and distilleries that have since opened. And it's just been fun to be part of the like revitalization of our neighborhood, because, you know, all us breweries are down there. They're starting to build new apartment buildings and bring in other businesses. And it's just been nice to be part of that.
Yeah, that's really cool. Cause now you got you're like the hub. Like, that area is now like the hub of breweries and distilleries. Like, that's really cool to be a part of that.
Yeah. And none of that was there when we signed the lease. The neighborhood was significantly more terrifying when we were first looking at it. The Shorecast signed their lease around the same time we did. They got built out a little bit faster. Our build out took us 1.5-2 years after signing the lease. And I think Night Shift had signed a lease, but they're a very different company than they are now. So our parking lot wasn't paved. It was surrounded by a 8-foot high fence with like barbed wire at the top.
It had like the sliding chain link fences that were horribly padlocked together. So we just had to like drag them open every time we wanted to get the car in there.
It's super inviting.
But yeah. We were just like, it's got potential. It's fine. Yeah. It's cheap.
Yeah. as long as we can convince people that we're not going to murder them if they come here, they'll have a great time.
Yeah.
Like, so many stories about that building in the early days.
Yeah.
Changed so much over the years. But yeah, we sort of lucked out with the location. Like Jared said, Night Shift changed locations a few weeks after we signed our lease and moved into the spot where they're at now. I'm sure you've been there before.
Yep.
And then, Short Path opened about a year before we did. There's a restaurant that has opened on that block as well. And yeah, we've been there for 5 years now.
Okay, that was my next question. So 2015, 2016?
Yeah, we signed the lease at the end of 2014, and like build out started in earnest in 2015 at some point. And brewed our first batch May 2016, opened the tap room August 2016.
Okay. All right. So like we were chatting about beforehand, you got a big banger coming up for the 5-year anniversary this year.
Yes, we do. So we have had this tradition going for several years now where the anniversary of our tap room is just a parking lot party full of live music and special beers. And the fun thing about the beers is that they're brewed to pair with the music of the bands that are playing.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we think there's a lot of parallels between beer and music as far as like creativity and the craft go. Personal tastes are very important. And this party has been growing in scope every year. Every year we just like tack on more bands and like more vendors. Just we try and bring all of the people that support us over the course of the year in the tap room together for a big party. Since we all got robbed of a good time and parties last year, we really wanted to make year 5 special. It's a big milestone for us. Half decade is huge. We've survived so much over the last year and a half. So instead of one day of music and beer, we're having 3 days of music and beer to include all of the bands that we're friends with. And if everything pans out, I'm still finalizing everything. But if everything pans out, we'll have 11 bands over the course of 3 days. A couple of them are playing multiple sets.
Oh, wow.
We'll be brewing at least 11 special beer releases.
Trying to brew at least 11 special beer releases.
We'll see if Father Time lets us do that. So Friday, August 27th, we'll kick off the festivities with all heavy metal all night long. It's our favorite genre of music. It's how Jared and I met. And it's always playing in the tap room, but this night we'll have it live. We'll be doing a big barbecue with like beer braised hot dogs and burgers and things like that. We'll have our hot sauce friend, Alex's Ugly Sauce, there slinging custom blends of hot sauce and doing little hot sauce flights.
Oh, nice.
Saturday, there will be live music all day long instead of just the night. We'll have 5 or 6 bands over the course of the day, a ton of beer releases. One of our bartenders runs a little pizza company with her husband called Pizza Project, and they'll be popping up with sourdough pizzas and things like that. And then Sunday, we'll have some like blues and rock style bands, and we'll be doing a chicken and waffles hangover brunch. So yeah, it'll just be a weekend of festivities. We do special merch for it. We release special glassware, just pull out all the stops. I'm so excited to be able to plan it again.
Yeah, that's so cool. Especially after the last like 15 months we've had at this point, however long it's been. Like that's awesome. I'll be there. Like my wife and I, ironically enough, were supposed to be gone that last weekend of August, but we're not anymore. So now We'll come by. Hopefully, like attempting 11 specialty brews. How, like, I don't even know the process, but how do you come up with so many different flavors to try? And like at some point, like, I feel like so many of them have been tried. Like, how do you go about the process of coming up with 11 specialty brews for a weekend?
That is a difficult question to answer, or at least harder than it should be.
We usually start by thinking about what styles we want to see on a menu, and then we sort of pair those up to bands.
Okay.
So for example, the last time we did this, we did seven different beer styles. We had a wit beer for something light, easy drinking. We had a couple pale ales, an IPA, a dry stout, a smoked beer, an amber. We just tried to cover the whole beer spectrum because the music covered an entire spectrum.
Right. Yeah. So a lot of it comes up with saying like, all right, what does our ideal menu look like? What are the 11 beers that we think we should have? And then like, do any of these jump out to us? We don't generally solicit suggestions from the bands because that makes it a lot harder to plan out the menu. But one of the bands is headed by a brewer that we know, and he was pretty insistent about wanting a smoked beer, and we love that. So it's hard to turn that down. It's not exactly the most popular style, but it's an interesting contrast to a lot of the other stuff that's out there. I think we actually had a barrel aged blend last year.
We did.
I like barrel aged.
For the band that has been playing, they've played at every single anniversary. They're an instrumental surf rock band called the Weisternauts. They're locally based in Somerville, and they're just fun. It's perfect hot day beer drinking music.
Yeah.
And we've done a different brew for them every single year, but by the time the fourth anniversary rolled around, we were just like, we should just make a blend of all of our greatest hits and name it after your greatest hits album. That's what we did for them last year. And that was fun because it was a special bottled release instead of, not like cans aren't special, but there's something about a bottle of beer that feels fancy.
Yeah, for sure.
But this year I emailed them and I was like, you know, you've been here every year. What do you want to drink?
That's fair.
We'll be brewing whatever that is for them this year.
Nice. That's awesome. How many brewmasters do you have? Do you both brew or?
We do both brew.
We do. There's six of us in production. Four of us are trained on the brew house, including me and Jared. But there's so much more that goes into making beer than the physical act of brewing.
Right.
Like what people think of on brew day with the paddles and the grain, the boiling and everything. So I guess we like to think of production as more of like a big group project. Just everyone brings something different to the table.
How do you come up? I'm always curious about this. All the different, like the different flavors, but like the names, like how much creativity and how much collaboration goes into coming up with the full lineup that you have?
Short answer, it depends.
Yeah.
A lot of our beers are inspired by just general events and people and situations in our community. So we use that as a starting point. If we're just making something like a single hop pale ale, we'll usually name it after the hop so that people will ask us about it. And we use it as like an educational opportunity. Actually, going back to, you know, what I was saying about community, a lot of our beers are indeed collaborations or white label beers, like custom beers for events, mostly weddings. I'll let Jared tell this story, actually.
Which one?
The start of the wedding beers.
Oh, God. Yeah. So back before Bone Up existed, like my brother told me that he was getting married and he was throwing a backyard wedding party. And the idea that I ended up coming up with was I made two beers, like a bride beer and a groom beer, and they were made to be blended at serving into a beer tail. They were made to go together, get it? After Bone Up had been open for a couple of months, a good friend of my brother's who had been at the wedding was like, hey, we're getting married in like 6 months. Can you do that same thing for us? And we were just like, oh, like, as long as your venue is willing to like buy it from a self-distributed brewery, like, sure, go for it.
Yeah.
And we get to sit down and drink some beers with them. And we're like, okay, what do you want your beer to be? What do you want your beer to be? And it turned out that they both wanted chocolate stout, which really doesn't work when you blend a chocolate stout with a chocolate stout.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's maybe not the thing that everyone wants to be drinking when they're outside in July. We came up with some other ideas for that one, but
one of which was a chocolate stout.
It was a chocolate stout and a blonde ale with orange peel in it.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, they blended into a nice like chocolate orange brown. Like having one that's really light and one that's really dark is like, it's a nice visual effect because then the beer tail actually looks different.
Right.
If you have a pale ale and a pale ale, it's going to turn into a pale ale when you blend them. So,
but
we've done that a couple of times. Just people have seen it and thought the idea was cool and asked us to do it for them. Sometimes it'll just be a single beer for a wedding, which is also a lot of fun. And Yeah, a lot of times, sometimes that's named after the couple. Sometimes they pick the name. That's one of those things where like, all right, well, you pick this name, but we will get sued if we sell beer that has this name. So we might need to choose something else.
Yeah, that's fair. I love stouts, chocolate stouts. I'm a big stout guy, but yeah, you're right. Like July, August, it's hard to take one of those down in a 90 degree day.
Disagree, but I see where you're coming from.
And mostly for weddings, people want something that's generally a crowd pleaser or something pretty light and easy drinking, lower ABV. But the wedding beers are fun because the couple gets so into it and it's so neat to be able to do this special thing for them. Yeah. They tell all their friends, we always see the couple for like the whole time the beer is on tap in the tap room. They'll be there like twice a week. Like, yeah. This is my beer. Someone made this for me.
Yeah.
And so it's just a great way to expose people to the brewery and to get people talking about our brewery at the wedding.
Yeah. No,
after. For sure. We've run the program completely on word of mouth since 2017.
Wow.
Do have plans to expand it at some point, but you know, last year just set everyone back in a million ways. So we're just going to take in a few requests this year. We already got a couple wedding beers lined up and then we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. That's really cool.
The other program we have that I really love a lot is we call it the Pepper's Past series, where we brew beers named after dogs that are the recipe is inspired by the dog's personality. We serve it in a special glass with a little dog on it, and you can like keep the glass for a couple bucks. All the proceeds go to rescues.
Oh, no way.
Have cycled through pretty much all of our childhood dogs, you know, dogs that we grew up with that are, you know, just a memory now, to raise some money. And people will see the dog beer on the chalkboard and they'll start talking about it. We've just gotten people who email us out of the blue just requesting like, hey, can you brew this beer for my dog who, you know, passed away 6 months ago? I miss them so much.
Aww.
So it's just a nice way to honor their memory, raise a little bit of money. And
yeah, that's phenomenal. No, that's really cool.
Stories about dogs.
I mean, if you don't like, I kind of judge people if they don't like dogs. So I think that like, that's pretty cool. That touches my, I love dogs. I'm a big dog guy. We were chatting beforehand. My boy's 13. So I love that. So let's get into the, like, when you guys first opened up, like what are some of the early, I imagine it's a laundry list, but like, what are some of the early challenges that you faced trying to start your own business? But what are some of the early successes that you were like, you experienced and you said, hey, this is a really good business. Like, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah. One of those lists is a lot longer than
I bet. Yeah. You can just give me a couple, maybe.
I think the biggest challenge we faced early on was that neither Jared or I come from a business background necessarily. So a lot of it was, we don't know what we don't know. And we're just sort of trying to figure it out as we go along.
Yeah.
We've done okay for ourselves, but yeah, there were a lot of pretty steep learning curves the first year or so. The other big setback was equipment limitations, which I'll let Jared talk about a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, like I said earlier, like we were looking at a very specific and pretty small size, and breweries that size weren't as much of a thing 5-6 years ago than they are now. So there were a lot fewer companies offering equipment in our size, and even fewer. Oh, sorry. We brew 3.5 barrel batches. Yeah. Standard size for small breweries is usually like 7 to 15. A lot of the like regional breweries brew in like 100 barrel batches and so on and so forth. Like you can, there's kind of no ceiling on how high up you can go.
We're like a drop in the bucket compared to most though.
Yeah. Yeah. The easy, comparison I use is like last year we brewed, I think, 375 barrels of beer. A barrel is 31 gallons. It's a weird brewer's term that nobody else in the world uses. But yeah, we brewed 375 barrels of beer last year. That's approximately what Harpoon made on Monday.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. okay.
So it's a just a little bit of a difference in scale. So in general, like a lot of bigger breweries will have like a pilot system where they will brew small batch versions of their stuff to make sure they want to scale it up. Yeah. And that's our main system. Our main system is actually smaller than a lot of bigger breweries' pilot systems. I think Allagash's pilot system is 10 barrels, which is 3 times the size of ours.
Jack's Abbey's pilot system is 5 barrels.
Yeah. So is Castle Island's, I think. Yeah. But yeah. So, and yeah, a lot of equipment kind of didn't exist in like the lower end of the price range that we were looking at, because a lot of smaller equipment was designed to be pilot systems, which is designed to exactly replicate very big, very fancy brew houses, just smaller. So a lot of that ended up being cobbled together. There's a lot of stuff in the early days that was just like, six different adapters strung together to be able to get any of the parts to fit together. It was an interesting learning curve on that front, to say the least.
Yeah, no, I bet. But,
I mean, as soon as we had cash coming in from the taproom side of the business, we took all of that and just used it for equipment upgrades. And we've just been slowly improving and upgrading everything since. We've added more tanks. Everything is top-notch stainless, temperature controlled now, which is great.
Yeah.
Our first fermenters were plastic and temperature controlled with a portable AC unit, which temperature control is really important in brewing. And we kind of didn't have it for the first year or so.
We still managed to make some pretty good beers that year, but yeah, our stuff has definitely improved since 2016, 2017.
I mean, that kind of leads me to my next question though. Like, that's probably why you've been so successful up to this point. Like, you know, you guys, it seems like the brewery scene has gotten big over the last decade or so in particular, I'd say. But, you know, you guys in particular, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you guys have like a big impact in the community aspect within Bone Up. And I think that's part of the reason why you've been so successful up to this point. I mean, 5 years is nothing to sneeze at. You know, you got to get past those first couple of years. Those first couple of years are going to be thin when you run a business, you know, and then you throw in COVID like year four. I mean, like, you know, the fact that you guys have gotten to year five is pretty impressive, I would say.
We're happy to be here. Community has always been something that's been a huge focus at our brewery. I know every brewery says that, but for us, like, making good beer is just the bare minimum. I think you really have to sell your story and you really have to create personal connections with your customers to keep them coming back. Like, everyone in Boston makes good beer.
Yeah.
So how do you get people to become fixtures in your tap rooms? How do you get them to come to your events, try your new releases? Yeah. You talk to them, you become their friends, you make beers with them sometimes.
Yeah.
Jared and I just think of the brewery as an extension of ourselves. So we will fight tooth and nail to keep it going and to keep it thriving.
But I mean, that's kind of the keys to business. Like, business isn't sales, business is relationships, right? So like, if you're connecting with business owners and your customers and your clientele, I mean, you know, the 3-day weekend that you guys have coming up in August sounds amazing. Like, I'll 100% be there. You know, you talked about the dogs. Like, I'm such a softy for dogs, right? So like, it's just, you're touching on people and you're actually like impacting them with things that are important to them. It's just, I don't know. Like, I think that's part of the reason why you've been so successful to this point, you know? So let's get into COVID a little bit. We don't have to spend too much time on it because I think everybody's a little bit tired of it, but certain industries weren't impacted, right? Like, I had a veterinary clinic on here a couple months ago and his business went crazy because so many people were adopting all of a sudden, right? But now certain other industries like breweries, restaurants, you know, you had to take a hit and through no fault of your own. So how big of an impact, obviously, I think that's an understatement, that COVID had on you last year, but did it force you to pivot in any way? And then what was the outreach for the community, for the two of you, to, you know, people trying to help out during the crazy time last year?
Spring lockdown was wild. We went from being pretty much 100% draft operation, no real distribution, no real packaging, completely taproom focused, to go sales only, no one's allowed inside overnight. And, you know, we were just talking about how much Jared and I really depend on fostering and growing personal relationships with people. That was taken away from us. Despite all of that, we had such great outreach from the community last spring and of course the whole summer. But I remember those early weeks, we put all our beers up for sale online so people could pre-order, do curbside pickup. And it was just crazy. Just the to-go orders, the home deliveries, all of that, we were just slammed.
Yeah.
And people were just buying gift cards, buying merch. We were shipping stuff all over the country.
We weren't. That wasn't legal.
Not beer. Yeah. Merch and gift cards and stuff like that.
It's an important distinction.
Yes, it is. we did have to completely change our business model overnight. We survived off of government grants, PPP loans, things like that. We had to furlough our whole front of house staff in March since we had no tap room. But we brought them all back by June once we were allowed to reopen a beer garden. We brought some of them back in the spring to help with to-go sales.
Yeah.
Once we figured out what was and wasn't safe for bringing our employees in.
Yeah. It was just me and Jared running the show for most of March and April.
Yeah.
We were just like, everyone just stay home. Like, we don't know what's going on. Like,
yeah,
let us, you know, figure it out and make sure it's safe for you guys to come back.
Right.
Miraculously, no one on staff got COVID, like, the whole time. I have no idea how we lucked out so much, but we also started. So one of our plans for 2020 in general was to scale up the packaging side of our business. I mentioned that we had been 100% draft until the pandemic hit. We had signed down with a mobile canner called State 64 in mid-February, and we started packaging our beer in 16-ounce cans, like 4-packs for the first time ever. And then 2 weeks later, we're just like, cool, this is our only option for selling beer now. So the silver lining to COVID, other than getting an expanded outdoor space in front of the brewery, was fast-tracking buying our own canning line. So we could have more flexibility over our packaging schedule, distribute our beer more.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much covered what I was going to say. Like, yeah, we had intended to kind of do a slow rollout of cans and work with a mobile canner a couple times a month. And then as soon as we didn't have any other option, their schedule filled up and we're just like, all right, well, we need to put beer in cans every week and we can get 2 days a month with them if we're lucky.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of scheduling gymnastics just to be able to work with their schedule.
Tied up tanks a lot.
Yeah. And it was just like, all right, well, we could be making more beer, but these tanks are all full waiting to be emptied into cans and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So we ended up biting the bullet on that at least a full year before we intended to actually make that step. I'm glad we did. It's great having a canning line, but we didn't want to have to buy one yet.
That part of the business will never be the same for us. I think that we have grown a lot and, you know, figured out just how flexible we can be over the last year, which is great. And it's like, cool, we survived COVID. What else can we do?
Yeah.
But there are some parts of the business that are completely changed from what we thought they would be. If you had talked to me a year and a half ago, I would have never said we'd be where we are right now.
Yeah. And yeah, there ended up being some kind of weird side effects that were like mostly during like the scariest COVID days. Like one of our distributors reached out to us and he said, hey, we're trying to sell these produce boxes. It's $60 worth of produce for $35. Are you interested in becoming like a retail point for that? And so we ended up selling those for our tap room for, I'd say, spring through early summer. And we're allowed to do beer deliveries for the first time ever. So we're just delivering beer and produce to people for 3 months.
It was great. I survived off those produce boxes because I was too afraid to go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
It's so healthy. But yeah, I mean, we tried to help out everyone that we could as far as our vendors and suppliers went. One of the reasons this distributor wanted to do the produce boxes was just to keep the supply chain moving since restaurants weren't picking up any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And we thought it was a great option to, you know, get fresh food to people's doors, to eliminate lines at the grocery store, you know, whole stop the spread thing. So yeah, I forgot about that.
I didn't. I spent a lot of time driving around with a trunk full of veggies.
I remember last spring, we were like, so apparently we're just like a grocery store now. We thought about opening up like a little bodega type thing in the tap room while it was closed, just to sell like toilet paper and hand sanitizer and stuff while people grabbed beer to go.
That's crazy.
On our hands.
Yeah, that's crazy. Hey, you got through it. I guess that's all that matters. You're able to get through it. So what do you see for the future of Bone Up? I mean, do you think you'll always stay where you are? Do you want to get to a point where you have to get a bigger facility, or is that just a whole pain in the ass? Like, I guess, what do you see for the future of Bone Up? And it's only 5 years, so it's still in its infancy, more or less.
Yeah, I don't think we really want to like grow to the point where we need like, you know, a 50 barrel brewery or anything like that.
Yeah.
Upgrading some of our equipment wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but I think we would at most want to scale up from tiny to regular small. Yeah, we've actually already expanded within the building once.
Going on twice.
We're at least looking into doing it a second time, but nothing has been announced, so I didn't want to tell anyone about that. Kind of getting more space so that people have enough space to be comfortable when we're full is really the only goal. And I mean, if we have to make more beer for that, then so much the better.
Right. Yeah.
I really think the next year and a half is going to be a lot of rebuilding to the momentum that the tap room had before. We've been busy. We've still been moving a lot of beer, but we had a lot of great side programs going that just sort of came to a halt last year. And that's something that is going to take up a lot of my time the rest of this year, trying to rebuild. We had all these arcade games I have to get back. We had a cheese program that I was running. We had trivia nights going, all sorts of private events and, you know, special bookings like weddings and baby showers and things like that. So it's just getting back into the swing of things for the rest of the year. And I think 2021 we'll see more growth on the production side for us. Again, like Jared said, nothing crazy.
Yeah.
But just rebuilding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. Last few questions that I've asked every guest is like COVID in particular. It's interesting. I saw a ton of people try to start their own businesses that they were kind of hesitant to beforehand. You know, they get furloughed, they get laid off. It's like, oh shit, like I don't have a job anymore. I don't have an income. Like, I guess now's the time to go into it that, you know, people are holding back beforehand. What advice would you give to someone who'd like to start their own business? That doesn't have to necessarily be a brewery, but just first thing that comes to mind, someone that's looking to be an entrepreneur.
Don't. No, seriously though, like the thing that that tripped me up the most when I was like trying to plan versus actually trying to implement is like, I researched it a lot and there was a lot of stuff in planning where it was like, oh, you don't want to do this because that's really labor intensive. And my thought process at the time was like, oh, like labor intensive is fine. I really don't mind putting in the hard work. And I never made the connection that labor intensive actually means time intensive. And we were sleeping 4 hours a night for a year, like something else that's time intensive really wasn't in the cards for a lot of stuff. So I think I should have like planned the use of my time better when I was in the planning stage, which isn't like easy to apply advice, but that is the one thing that I wish I had done significantly differently in the early stages.
Yeah. What about you, Liz? Anything to add? Or
I honestly was going to say something similar in different words. My big takeaway from the early days was, I would say just be prepared to sacrifice a lot more of your personal time.
Yeah.
Than you ever thought was imaginable. There are only so many hours in the day. You said there are so many aspects to running a business, especially when you're so small. Like there's no management. It's just me and Jared. And there's just so much more that goes into running a business than you ever think there's going to be.
Yeah.
Personally, like, I think this is all super worth it. I don't want another job. I love what we do so much. So definitely worth it, but it's not for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hardest part when you start your own business, right? Like the end result is usually worth it, but it takes so much sweat equity in the early years that you just, you know, you don't see an ROI on those things super early on. But the flexibility of being a business owner and being able to have that freedom is totally worth it. It takes a special person to start their own business for sure. Cause even like when you start, like there's just so many things you don't know, right? Like you just kind of learn as you go. And it's so easy to say like, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that. But you have zero idea if you don't have a mentor, you're just kind of doing things and figuring out on your own, you know?
Yeah, we were just guessing and it worked out okay.
Yeah. No, it seems like it.
The brewing industry is generally a cooperative one. There are a lot of great online resources, forums, group chats, and other brewers and other brewery owners tend to be pretty open about their business practices, what works, what doesn't work, where they get their equipment. There was a lot of sharing of grain, of rice hulls, of empty aluminum cans over the last year. And I don't think that's super common in other industries.
Yeah, no, probably not. Yeah.
So having that resource definitely helped a lot. Having a lot of other local brewers that are super friendly and supportive was great to be able to talk to them in the early days.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's cool that breweries get that community aspect to each other and try to like mentor, you know, new ones. So last couple of questions. If you could tell your 18-year-old selves one thing, what would you tell them?
I mean, my first instinct is that I would slap my 18-year-old self upside the head. Realistically, I was going into college then. I would probably tell him that he should focus on biochem instead of math in college. You don't usually hear biochemistry and self-taught in the same context, and yet here I am.
So last question, and this question I've asked every guest, and I think every answer has been different, which I love. Everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to themselves. How do you two define success?
Trusting your employees enough to take time off for yourself.
Crap, I was going to say time off too.
Yeah.
Like we don't get a ton of it, but Jared and I usually rotate out one day a week where one of us gets the whole day off, the other gets a half day. Okay. Like I said, we were both able to get away for this weekend and just go do our own thing. It's not common. It doesn't happen all the time, but I think it's great that we can trust our production team and trust our bartenders to run the place.
Yeah.
When we're not there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think getting that time is invaluable. You can't like initially when I asked that question, I think subconsciously I was thinking of a monetary answer, but not one person has said that, right? Like, cause especially when as a business owner, like that time to yourself is just precious because it doesn't happen too often because you just, you're sleeping 4 hours a night and you put all this sweat equity into it. So I think that's a great answer. Like, I couldn't agree more. I think, especially over the last year and a half or so, people realize like the little things, like even just getting outside and walking around your neighborhood sometimes is just priceless, you know? So,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Having dogs forced us to do that, which is what ended up being one of the biggest benefits.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's definitely not monetary because every time we get money, we just put it back into the business.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. No, I think that's awesome. Jared and Liz, thank you very much for coming on Boss's Best. It was a blast having the both of you on. I'm excited to promote yourselves and Bone Up and then the, you know, the big 3-day weekend at the end of August.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And to anyone else who's listening out there, if you haven't been by the tap room, come by. We're right in Everett. We're open 7 days a week.
Awesome. Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks, you too.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @BostonsBest_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/BostonsBestPodcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.